US President Donald Trump has escalated his jaundiced stance on South Africa following his previous claims about land confiscation in the country. That refers to our expropriation bill. In a controversial, interesting, weird move, Trump has now directed officials to prioritize the resettlement of Afrikaners and their families in the U.S. as refugees. Okay. On Friday, he also signed an executive order halting financial aid to the country, further straining diplomatic relations between the two nations, although recent stories have it that PEPFAR, one of the aid agencies, is not that badly affected. However, somebody who will understand the landscape a lot better than most of us is Professor John Stremlow, Honorary Professor of International Relations at the University of Witwatersrand. Professor Stremlow, welcome to Newsbeat.
Thank you very much.
A lot to digest. I'm sure you are also scratching your head a little bit about the prioritizing the resettlement of Afrikaners and their families to the U.S. I've checked the airports, checked the harbors. I don't see any groups of distressed Afrikaners with their bags ready to go to the U.S.
Well, Afroforum is a civil rights organization that has 230,000 members in a country of 60 million people. And I think they, at least a spokesman for Afroforum told me that they are patriotic South Africans and they don't want to move. But they appreciate Donald Trump's empathy with them because he's a white tribalist, as they are. And so that's the story, as far as I can figure it out, why it appears in this executive order when he is deporting people of color and us. I leave to others to explain. I find Trump, on the one hand, very, very difficult to predict, but on the other hand, very simple in his approach. He doesn't have an affection for the truth and doesn't read very much, but at least that is the evidence of it. I mean, he doesn't seem to have any understanding of the history of South Africa. And, you know, DEI is in the Constitution, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
And it's not a plaything. And nor is it in the American context, overcoming slavery and Jim Crow. I mean, it's a black minority, but the struggle continues there as it does here for equity and fair inclusion.
I mean, one almost thought that here could be an area where the two countries could actually work together on looking for solutions, although, as you've correctly pointed out, situations are slightly different. Yet we see this total polarization of the issue. How many people in the U.S. do you think would understand the nuances of the South African situation? I don't think many.
No, probably not many, but after all, you know, who is the United States? And how did Donald Trump get elected narrowly? He lies about this sweeping victory. It was a very close election in a few swing states, and he did come out on top, as Joe Biden did in 2020, which Trump has never accepted the certified vote count outcome of that election. So I can't explain Donald Trump except in his prism of prejudice and through his prism of prejudice. And I don't think he reflects the majority of the Americans, and certainly the Democratic Party understands, and any American Democrat who has an interest in history would understand the history and parallels between South Africa and the U.S. But that's foreign policy matters very little to average voters in either of our countries, but you know, we rely on our leaders to make sensible policy judgments. And in Trump's case, he's careening around and flooding the zone and making a lot of noise. I just have written a piece that I hope will get published that is focused on the G20. Joe has declined to come. And I say, well, at least it's not a distraction, so get on with the business and the opportunity to work with the other members of the G20 and come up with a plan for alleviating the suffering of Africans that are badly damaged by Trump's curtailing of humanitarian assistance.
You're not the first person to say that the G20, in a sense, could be a blessing in disguise. You correctly say there won't be the noise, because if Trump or Mark Rubio comes, there will be a lot of noise. It's the only thing I can call it, a lot of static. That with this out of the picture, you're not the first person to say that this actually gives a unique space for other countries to actually get focused.
It does, and I believe that. But I also go a step further and recommend that the countries that do show up for the various activities under host South Africa also spend some time thinking about skipping the next in line for the Troika, which is the United States. The United States is supposed to host the 2026 G20. And I think there's a number of options, but my preferred option, to be very quick about it, is to have South Africa serve for 2 years rather than one. And it would allow for the South Africans to make the case for including Africa more robustly in assistance programs, especially given the Trump administration's, this will be reversed by either Congress, depending on it, if a Democratic majority is elected next year, or in 2028, if an alternative to Trump, and he can't run again, is chosen who is enlightened.
It's an interesting and confusing landscape. I also heard or read somewhere that Steve Bannon, one of his former advisors, had this theory in terms of Trump of bombarding the public or the United States nation with as many presidential orders as possible, have a total deluge, a flood of them, and have the hope that some of them will stick in a sort of another allegory of like throwing mud at a wall and hoping that some of it sticks. Do you think Trump has embraced this idea that I've only heard through about tertiary sources, that this was originally Steve Bannon's idea?
Well, I don't know whose idea it was originally, but it's clearly what they're attempting to do with Elon Musk facilitating it. But, you know, the arrogance of flooding the zone leads to stupid decisions in the rush, and you've got to keep the engine going. So I expect that Trump will stumble badly. And one way he stumbled is the alienating G20. He's not participating, and he's blaming, of all people, the host country, which is a constitutional democracy and has struggled through the same kind of racist past that the devil's the American body politic. And so, the ironies abound here, and history is one damn thing after another. So we'll watch this with interest, but I don't think it's going to stick for the long term.
Professor John Stremler, unfortunately we have to leave it there, but I think your career in international relations has got a whole new head of steam, hasn't it?
Well, yes, it is. But I was looking forward to a happy retirement with Kamala Harris in the White House. But frankly, such is life. So thank you for the encouragement, and I will pursue it.
As I said in the classics, no rest for the wicked. The show just goes
That's
on
right,
and on.
No rest for the wicked. You're right on that. Thank you.
Professor John Stremler, Honorary Professor of International Relations at WITSA. As always, thanks for joining us.